Lean Leadership Podcast, episode 54.
This is the Lean Leadership Podcast. Equip yourself with the tools for success in your team's lean journey by learning from the world's top lean professionals. Listen at the risk of improving with your host, Chris Burnham.
Today's guest is Gemma Jones. Gemma started her career studying mechanical engineering. She quickly discovered the world of continuous improvement and has spent 20 years working to improve processes and systems within various manufacturing industries, including automotive, pharmaceutical, dairy, cosmetics and toiletries, food, and medical devices. She's been a CI manager numerous times and an operations manager running a factory of over 500 people. In 2018, Gemma left the world of employment to establish her own business, Spark Improvement, aiming to switch on as many light bulbs as possible. Her mission is to help organizations be the best they can be through a combination of lean thinking, Toyota Kata, and visual facilitation and experiential learning. Gemma is based in Cheshire in the UK. Today's guest, Gemma Jones. Well, hello. Gemma, we briefly touched on who you were in the intro, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how lean and continuous improvement is a part of your life?
Cool. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for having me, first of all. So, my background, I've been in the sort of world of continuous improvement for about 24 years. I started off in mechanical engineering. That was my degree. And then I kind of discovered this world of manufacturing and continuous improvement and the whole world of lean thinking pretty quickly. And that's been the focus of my world for a very long time. But 2.5 years ago, I set up my own business. I left employment and I set out on my own, which was like something I'd wanted to do for about 15 years. And so now I work for myself. I generally work with small to medium businesses, size businesses, helping them kind of be the best version that they can be. So that's my focus.
Okay. A very unique time in history to go out on your own and start a new business. I'm sure there's lots of stories and challenges you can share with us here today about the last couple of years. But before we get started in the interview, we always ask our guests to share with us a quote or a mantra from one of their favorite leaders. Can you tell us what your quote is and why you chose it?
Okay, cool. Yeah, this was hard because I have a whole wall of quotes like next to me, literally. And I really like finding those little bits of information and, you know, that people have distilled down. So this was pretty hard. But one that I've been using a lot recently, kind of a mantra and a quote from someone is, and I got this from Mark Rosenthal at theleanthinker.com, but I think it comes from Mike Rother originally. And it's keep your blast radius small. And this is about, you know, doing tiny experiments. And, you know, if there's going to be an unintended consequence to something, keep it small so that impact is reduced. So about taking tiny steps and tiny experiments. So, yeah, that's my favorite mantra that I live by at the moment.
Mentally, I'm thinking about all of the different improvement events that I've been a part of through my career. And you're the ones that you do small incremental improvements where you learn from are usually the ones that stick. And it's the big, I would call cannonball improvements where you're just firing a cannonball at things that it doesn't end well always. Sometimes there's challenges that you don't anticipate with that.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely.
Gemma, one of my goals for this podcast is to help other lean leaders and professionals that are practicing right now, resonate with your experiences. So can you kind of walk through us a story about how you chose this profession to work in continuous improvement?
Okay. So at school, I really loved art and being creative and creating things and making pretty things. But I also really love maths and physics. Solving problems, running experiments, learning from experiments. So that was kind of my two big passions. And I was all set to go down the art college route. But my physics teacher took me to one side and said, you're an engineer, like I need you to go to engineering school. So I promised him I'd go and have a look. I didn't have many expectations, but I went and had a look and fell in love with mechanical engineering and also the kind of design engineering aspects of that. And at the time as well, someone said to me, you can't do engineering, you're a girl. And that was like a switch in my head of, right, that's what I'm going to do then. So I signed up for a 5-year mechanical engineering degree, a master's degree. I went all in, you know, and I was like, right, this is what I'm going to do. And that's where I fell in love with it. So, it's that was a big part of my life. And I love it. I love it.
So you're in this arena where someone has basically given you a challenge, whether they intended to or not. You're in the engineering world. At what point did lean and continuous improvement, what part did that become a focus of your work?
So we studied it at university. So I remember, and I've still got my notes of studying lean thinking and industrial engineering and all of those things. And it sounded really fascinating to me at the time, but it felt a bit abstract. Like I couldn't make that connection with reality. And it was very quickly. So I did a year in industry as part of my degree. My middle year of the 5 years was out in industry. And very quickly, I started to see how these things could, you know, work in practice. And I started to realize that this was about involving people on the shop floor and engaging them and you know, making that sort of incremental continuous improvement. And that's where I think I fell in love with it. So it was very quick. I started off as a projects engineer, but my job really was all focused around improvement, productivity improvement, team-based improvement, and so on. So it was very quick for me, and I was very lucky to be in an organization where they took that seriously, you know, where they believed in it.
Well, as the father of a 14-year-old daughter, I am grateful for the examples that you set in that. Gender doesn't really matter when it comes to making an impact in the world and choosing the profession that you have. So on a personal note as a dad, thank you. I think there needs to be more empowering role models out there for our daughters to follow. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Well,
you've had some success. You've had some mistakes. Can you walk through probably what you would consider what your biggest mistake would be with continuous improvement, maybe a pitfall, something that those of us that have been doing this, a learning experience when it comes to continuous improvement where things didn't go the way you intended?
So I don't think I've had many big setbacks not that I haven't had any mistakes. Of course, I've had mistakes every day, but I try to look at them in a positive way. But the big turning point for me, I guess, the kind of setback that, that helped shape my career and who I became was really, really early. So when I was a projects engineer and I found myself out in industry, out on the shop floor, trying to, you know, work with machinery and work with people and processes that I just didn't understand. And although I'd studied engineering for 2 years, my engineering knowledge in terms of like real basic fundamental mechanical awareness and things of machinery was not very good. And I really struggled to know the answers to the problems, you know, to know how to solve the issues, whereas all the other engineers around me could fix everything because they knew the machinery inside out, they knew the processes, they knew the materials. And I didn't know that. And I found that really hard at first, that I didn't have the answers to the problems. But I was determined again, you know, I had this voice in the back of my head, you can't be an engineer, you know, because you're a girl. And I wanted to prove myself and I wanted to prove that it was okay. And so I focused on, and I remember consciously doing this, of focusing on asking questions and focusing on building relationships with the people on the shop floor, the people who were doing the actual work, and the engineers, you know, the maintenance engineers and the lab technicians, building relationships with those people. I also focused on like visualizing data and, you know, drawing, you know, art was part of my schooling, but it's also a big part of my work. So being able to visualize things and show it to people and then say, right, what can you see? Like I couldn't see anything because I didn't understand it well enough, but I could make it look good enough that they could start to see trends and patterns. So I focused on those kind of three areas. And I saw it as a way to overcome my weaknesses. But what I actually realized pretty quickly was it became a strength. You know, I wasn't walking in as the expert with the answer. I was walking in with the questions to help other people find the answer. So it's not so much a mistake. It felt like a mistake and it felt like a failure at the time, you know, that I wasn't good enough. But I think in the end, I've realized over time, and it's taken a while for me to see that actually that's a strength. I don't know if that answered your question.
No, it was perfect. When you're telling that story, I'm thinking about Malcolm Gladwell and his book, David and Goliath. And the premise of the book is behind what we perceive as weaknesses are actually strategic advantages in the work that we do. And that if you lean into it and embrace it, then you turn it into a strength. And I think that that's just a great lesson for folks that are listening right now, that if you don't feel comfortable with the work that you're doing, lean into that. That's learning. That's the space where you're going to be able to bridge a gap, whether it's a gap with technical knowledge, a gap with behavioral knowledge with people. Just listen to the universe when that comes in. That it's the universe pushing you towards something that's going to be a strength for you one day.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious, Gemma, there has to be like your favorite story, like your aha, like you're doing the work and everything just clicks for you. And you're like, this is why I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing right now. What was that moment for you?
So that moment for me actually only came last year. So I'd had 23 years of experience working in CI. Lean thinking was always very much, you know, I used to joke, if you cut me open, you know, it would, like a stick of rock, it would say lean thinking inside. You know, it was kind of my religion that I lived by for 20 plus years. But last year during COVID, obviously my business was affected by it, luckily not very much, but I took the time to do some training and I kind of really focused on developing my skills, you know, whilst I was, you know, stuck at home like everyone else. And I did a training course in Toyota Kata. And I found that was kind of the missing piece from my puzzle. You know, I talked earlier about the sort of way of working that I developed in terms of asking questions and building relationships with people. And that had worked really well for me, but there was something missing, you know, in terms of a structured way to help people through improvement. And when I really understood about Kata and I really got it, I realized that was the missing piece. And I'd had the books on my shelf for a while, which I'm embarrassed to say, and I'd read them and I thought, yeah, that's interesting, that makes sense, but I didn't really get it. I hadn't really lived it and experienced it, so I didn't really understand the power of it. I look at it a bit like I had a book on the shelf that was about how to drive a Formula One car, and I'd read it and thought, yeah, that makes sense, that seems familiar, it seems similar to me driving my regular car. But it wasn't until I really got in the car and tried to drive it and you know, learn how to do it, that I really understood it. So Kata really has been the catalyst and has changed my whole focus of my work and the way that I work in a really positive and wonderful way. So I'm very grateful that that's come out of COVID. But yeah, it's shifted the way I work massively.
What I love about it, in my experience with Kata, is like you said, reading the book or going to a conference and seeing it, that it makes you aware of it. But once you see it on the Gemba with the people that are doing it, and you see with the improvement Kata and the coaching Kata, how empowering it is for individuals, yeah. That it gives them space to demonstrate mastery in front of leadership. Like, I understand my process. I know what I'm doing. And it's a card with questions. Same with TWI. If you have the card, you have the power. Like, you have the ability to be able to do that. I think more people need to try. It's like, it's what you're talking about. Run the experiment. Just try it one place and use the process and learn from it.
Totally.
Do you have a lean or continuous improvement pet peeve or something you frequently see being applied or done wrong?
So I do. And, you know, I have a few, like most, you know, people who've been in CI a while. But the big one for me, I think, is when I see CI practitioners or, you know, businesses doing CI. They might not have a CI practitioner, but, you know, businesses doing CI where they focus on the tools and the techniques and not on the people. And not on coaching. So, you know, for example, you know, I remember being in industry and, you know, the main focus of the CI team was kind of implementing a 5S audit every week, you know, where they just focused on every area of the factory has to be up to a certain standard. Now, I love 5S, don't get me wrong. And I'm all for things being clean and tidy and having lovely signs and color codes. It's wonderful. But if people on the shop floor see that being the focus and then being graded and measured based on how tidy their area is, when they know full well they've got major problems with componentry supply or with machinery breakdowns behind the scenes that's affecting their kind of day-to-day work, that's frustrating them every minute of the day, you know, that's not right. But I see that a lot. And I certainly have seen that a lot through my career where the focus is on the tool. And, you know, there's people jumping up and down needing help and we're kind of not focusing on them. So that's my biggest pet peeve.
Yeah, they're focused on making sure that the blue tape is in the right place, on the right floor, in the right spot, instead of correcting your machine downtime or your tool life or material delivery. I think I've seen that. I've seen that, and I've also seen it where someone takes the tool too far, where it's, oh, we're gonna do 5S, and without teaching the why behind it or why it's important, it's just they go around with a label maker, and then you walk in and somebody's got a tape around their stapler on the desk. That doesn't improve business results, right? So, yeah, you're laughing because you've seen it too, right?
I have. Right.
So, well, Gemma, what do you consider the most important thing you've learned in your lean journey so far?
I think it's about relationships. I think CI is all about relationships at every level and the importance of building that to build trust and respect. And the power of that is huge. And I learned that fairly early on from someone who mentored me, and it's been really powerful.
I think having a good mentor is also a piece there that goes along with that. You have to have someone that's in your corner that you can go to and that will be radically transparent with you when you're not doing things the way they need to be done.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Well, what piece of advice would you give to someone who's just starting out with lean or continuous improvement?
So I would say go find a kata coach and learn the kata. Be a learner, you know, have someone coach you. Don't try and coach someone. Be a learner and have someone coach you. Quickly.
Yeah, quickly. Yeah, like right now. As you turn off this podcast episode, go find your kata coach. Who did you find as your coach, and how did you find your coach?
So I was really lucky. I did my training last year with Thilo Schwartz, who's, you know, really, he's known as being the coach's coach. Brilliant 6-week training. I came out of that and was like, great, I'm trained, I can go do this. So I went to go and do it with a client and then went, oh God, this is harder than I, you know, this is way harder than I thought. So I was very lucky. I'm part of the Women in Lean Network. So I reached out to a lady called Tracy Defoe, who's, you know, a really wonderful kata coach, a really seasoned, experienced kata coach. And I said, hey, I need your help. You know, I need you to train me. Like I need more training. Like, how do I do this? I need to get in one of your dojos. You know, I want to learn. And she said, no, you're not ready for that yet. Let me coach you. Like, you need to be coached properly. You know, one-to-one, and let's just do this. Like, let's take it. So very generously, she gave me her time. And for 6 weeks, she coached me through the summer last year. And then out of that, we actually set up a group. And I'm really proud to now be able to say that Tracy's my coach and also Julie Simmons is my coach. And we've got this amazing global group of the Kata Girl Geeks, where we've got groups of women coaching each other. And it's a brilliant thing. So I now have multiple coaches and I'm very lucky.
So I know that the universe is working in the right way for me, because the very last episode that I recorded for this podcast was with Tracy Defoe. And I did not know that the two of you guys had a relationship. So that's just that really drives home that I'm talking to the right people and asking the right questions. So I appreciate that. What Tracy's done and with women like you, with the Kata Girl Group, and just empowering women in this thing called continuous improvement. I think it's awesome. We need more of it everywhere.
It's a wonderful group. It started with two of us, and now we have over 120 people, 120 women across the world.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's really awesome. And we meet twice a week, and it's awesome.
And she mentioned in our conversation, she mentioned that, Tracy mentioned that if you can't be humble and be a learner, being a coach is difficult. And yeah, it's almost absolutely. Like you need to be the learner first before you become the coach.
Yeah. And we see a lot of people who come and they say, hey, I've been a lean coach for 20 years. So I can be a kata. I've read the books. I can be a kata coach and I can jump right into that role. And we will always say to those people, no, like with all due respect, just go back and you be a learner. Just go be a learner for a while. And I tell you, 10 times out of 10, those people come back and go, wow, I see what you mean. Like, that was incredible. I understand it on a whole nother level and I've experienced it. I can feel it. They've now got more empathy with their learners in going forward because they know how it felt. You know, it's a really, really important piece. Definitely.
In previous roles that I've had, I have purposefully gone out and hired somebody outside the organization, even though I know it, even though I can do it, hired someone outside the organization to be the coach so that I could go through the experience with the team in that same way of, oh, he's trying to learn as well. He's we learn something every time we sit in the learner's chair.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or stand
absolutely.
In the learner spot, right? Yep.
Yeah. Totally.
What piece of advice would you give to the journeyman professional? Maybe it's a piece of advice that someone gave you recently.
So I don't mean to be difficult, but I'd say the same thing. Go get a kata coach and be a kata learner. You know, I don't think it's just for the CI professionals or the leadership or the, you know, the existing coaches in other fields. I think, you know, being a kata learner and being coached to achieve something so that you can learn that pattern of thinking and acting would be really valuable.
Great advice. Gemma, do you have a favorite book, author, or mentor that you'd like to recommend to our viewers and listeners?
So the book I want to recommend is The Coaching Habit by Michael Bungay-Stanier. I think it's a really wonderful book. It's really easy to read. You know, quite a lot of these kinds of things are difficult and dry and heavy going. I think this is really easy to read. I think his voice is wonderful, you know, the way he writes. And there's loads of things in there that you can pick up and use straight away. I recommend this to a lot of clients, a lot of friends, you know, when they're talking about things, I'm like, go look at question three, you know, and just use that tomorrow with people. It's really easy to go and use that. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the follow-up to it as well, The Advice Trap, which is also amazing. And it's all, you know, it's about being humble and staying curious and not jumping in with the answers, the same kind of thread as I was talking about before.
So I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here for folks that haven't read the book and they need to understand the power of question number three. Can you share with folks what that question is?
Oh, I can't remember if it was question number three, but the big question in here is what he calls the or question. Oh, it's question number two. Sorry. So the or question. So he calls it the or question, and the AWE stands for and what else. And the premise with that question is when you ask somebody something, the first answer they give you isn't necessarily the full answer or the right answer or the thing that they should or want to say. It might be the thing that they think they should say or that you want to hear. And by asking somebody, okay, and what else? You often find, you know, the deeper, more meaningful, more valuable, answers to that question. And I use that all the time. And I found it to be really valuable.
And I love it because it's a discovery question. It's open-ended. Yeah. You can't get a yes or no answer. It provokes reflection and thought before you project an answer.
Absolutely.
I for a long time on my laptop, I had written on a post-it note and cut it down to a strip and had it along the top of the bezel. And I wrote in my own handwriting, what is the real problem we're trying to solve here? Like, what's the problem behind the problem? And I think that, folks will give you their surface answer to make you go away. And if you persist and ask their opinion in a very humble way, like humble inquiry, you're going to unlock the challenges that that person's facing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I love it. I think it's a great question.
Gemma, it is. It's super powerful. So, Gemma, we know that magic wands don't exist, but if they did, and you had one and you're working with a client or with an organization or a group that you're working with, what would you typically wave your magic wand at first to try and improve?
9 times out of 10, I would say the leadership team. And I would want them to shut up, stop wading in with solutions, you know, stop criticizing, and start listening and understanding. That would be where I would start. And I say that with a lot of respect. You know, it's usually all, you know, they want to improve and they want to help and they're trying to be helpful. They're doing it with all the right intentions. But a lot of the time that kind of behavior and, you know, telling people what to do, giving solutions, you know, that I think is often very unhelpful and kind of clouds the air for everybody else. And, you know, let's just let everybody else have a voice and get the right people engaged at the right point. So that, yeah, the leadership team, make them shut up.
I think it can be unhealthy for the organization. So there's two modes that I see that occurring in. There's the mode where, I would call a bully manager, where they're just a bully. They're going to put their bias and their thumb on everything. The other way that challenge presents itself is I've seen genuinely fantastic leaders not understanding that they can help the most by being silent, and they just feel like that's their way of trying to contribute, and you have to coach them out of that. You say, I know you're right, but I just need you to sit in the back and nod your head and smile when someone asks a question, even if you know the answer, and turn around and say, oh, I have my own opinion, but I'm more interested in what you think. And yeah. I think leaders that are listening to this call, they know which mode that they normally present themselves in. And I would just I would ask that everyone try to be the second mode. If you're not aware of it, just make yourself aware of it, or ask your people. Go ask somebody. They'll let you know.
Yeah, I always think about leaders are on a scale, and they range from kind of Darth Vader at one side, you know, where they're shouting and they're telling and they're, you know, they're pinning people down, and, you know, ranging through to like the other side. I like to think of it as Mr. Miyagi from the Karate Kid, you know, where he's coaching mm-hmm. and teaching. And, you know, if you ask leaders where they are on that scale, they'll always say, oh, yeah, I do the coaching thing, you know, and I don't tell people and I'm not scary. But sometimes then you have to reflect back on that, and I kind of hold the mirror up and ask them to go ask some questions from their staff, because quite often they're actually further over to the other side than they think. And that can be a hard thing to do as an external person, to hold that mirror up.
It is, but that's also why they hire someone external to the organization to give them a different perspective. So, yeah. And if you're not doing that, you're not serving your client in a way that they want.
Not at all.
When you say that, Darth Vader, I can think of moments that I've sat in rooms with leaders that I felt like were choking me from with a glare from across the room. So I can relate to that. You know, I can connect to that. So, Gemma, this has been absolutely fantastic. How can people connect with you if they want to learn more about what you do, or if they have a question for you from something they heard on this podcast?
So I'm on LinkedIn. If you search Gemma Jones Spark, my business is called Spark Improvement. So Gemma Jones Spark on LinkedIn will find me. I also have a website, which is sparkimprovement.co.uk. And you can get through to my Twitter and my LinkedIn and my email from there too.
Well, that is absolutely fantastic. I will put links to that in the show notes page, along with links to the books that we discussed. And I'm just really grateful. Thank you for sharing your time with the podcast audience. This has been absolutely splendid. And I learned a lot, and I hope folks that have listened have gained a lot of perspective from it as well.
No worries. It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me, Chris.
I want to thank Gemma for being a guest on the podcast today. I know that I got a lot out of our conversation, and I hope that you did as well. be sure to go to the show notes page at leanleadershippodcast.com and check out the links on how to connect with Gemma if you have a question about what we talked today. As always, I welcome your feedback on how to improve the podcast. If you like the podcast, make sure that you subscribe or follow the podcast on whatever channel you listen to us on and leave a rating. Thank you for listening, and until next time, remember, seek progress over perfection.
Thanks for listening to the Lean Leadership Podcast with Chris Burnham. Get more info, resources, tools, or connect at leanleadershippodcast.com.